Tuesday night on the Fan pregame, and yesterday at 7:01 p.m., the second we said bye-bye and turned off our mics.
Just absolutely brutal.
We weren't even in our cars yet.
Yeah.
Breaking news. It was actually sad. Like, I wanted to get back in here to say, whoa, put us back on. But Leafs are going to name Austin Matthews the 26th captain in franchise history tomorrow at 11 a.m. We'll have that press conference live for you on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. But we'll bring in Luke Fox in about 5 minutes to break it all down. Mm-hmm. It's happening, folks.
Yeah, it's happening. We pregamed many things on The Fan pregame. But we got a big debut on the network tonight. Dana White's Contender Series on right after us on Sportsnet 360. Aaron Bronstetter will hop on in about a half hour to discuss that, tee it up, what this is all about. Plus, UFC 305 this weekend, so lots to get through with Aaron Bronstetter. And we'll also get to some other NHL items. But let's get right into the big news of 24
Cody
hours.
Cody Glass traded to the Pittsburgh Penguins.
That's big. That's definitely big for our producer today, David Sess.
Yeah, but he's excited.
The big one is definitely Matthews being named captain, we believe, tomorrow at a special news conference. I mean, they haven't said it yet, but it's happening.
It's happening.
It's happening. Your thoughts?
Where to begin? I mean, there's a lot to unpack. The timing of it, the way that it's being framed with Tavares, you know, passing on the torch in a sense, not being stripped of the C. And you can take that as you'd like, you know, whether he came to the table and said, I'd like to give the captaincy to Austin Matthews. I don't really believe that. Somewhere there was a conversation about changing this team. So that's a whole aspect of it. What the fallout will be in terms of who's going to wear the other letters on the team, the assistant captains, that stuff doesn't really matter as much, but it's clearly Austin Matthews' team. It has been for the last few seasons. He's become one of the best players in the NHL, and most of the time, your best player is a captain, so I don't really know how much it changes, right? I wonder how this all affects John Tavares, how this is going to be presented to us tomorrow. Tomorrow will be really interesting to see the theatrics of it. You know, it's going to be right beside Real Sports, where they sell the jerseys. So they just head on over and grab a new one. But no, in all seriousness, I think this was something that was going to happen regardless. I think Austin Matthews is the leader of this team, and he's going to be the formal leader with the C.
Yeah, I think two things can be true here, where it might absolutely amount to nothing. Like, it may not matter whatsoever, but at the same time, I also think it's a complete no-brainer. Yeah. Because, you know, moving on from John Tavares as captain, I would be worried about it if this was part of his identity. And it is, I guess, Maple Leafs captain, right? But the leadership thing, like, if that's 10% of what he brought to the table, 10% of the identity of John Tavares was what he brings from a leadership standpoint, you'd be like, okay, we're going to have less of a John Tavares. Mm-hmm. But I don't think there's a single concession made by not having him wear that letter anymore. And why is that? But it's because he's not Jonathan Toews or Sidney Crosby, where you can see it burn and you can see how he has an influence on others. Yeah, I'm sure there are things that he does that have a good effect on young players and other players around him, but we've seen it time and time again, especially in playoff moments, where you're like, John, what, like, where's the passion, to use a very key word in Leafland? Where is the response? Why aren't you showing us how much it matters or what needs to be done? Like, often we're left without that. And I'm not saying that Austin Matthews is going to do that, but if it empowers him in any way, then there's a potential benefit from it without an actual downside with the Tavares side of things. So it could just be ceremonious, and it will be ceremonious tomorrow. And I think you're right. The ceremony part does matter, but I don't think you can really risk losing anything with this move. The only benefit or the only thing there is a potential benefit in my eyes. There are lots of different things you can pull at this, and we'll get a chance to do it with Luke. But just like at a very baseline level, I don't think it hurts them. It can only help.
There's the fallout about, you know, Tavares is playing one more season of this contract. Personally, and we talked about this before we came on the air, I think that it makes it almost easier for Tavares to come back after that contract ends on a less expensive term. He's not got the expectation of being paid like a captain. He doesn't have to have the, hey, give me a new contract and I'll pass the C on to Austin Matthews. It's like part one of a part two of a changing of the guard in a sense. So I don't know if this means, for other people's perspective, if it means he's going to, you know, be out of town, or if he's more set in showing his leadership in different ways, and maybe that's taking less money. And then the big question too is who had more to play in this? Is there Keith Pelley? Is there Berube? Is it Bradtree Living? Is it John Tavares himself? And Luke Fox joins us now, who's going to have the answers to all of our questions. Of course, Luke, happy summer. This is a nice little treat mid-August.
Yeah, how's your summer going, guys? It's been a while.
Yeah, it's going well. Justin and I were literally yesterday 1 minute off the air when this news broke. So we've been waiting anxiously all day to try to decipher what we do know and what we don't know yet. And, of course, tomorrow will be a lot of the learning that we're probably looking for. But just to start on, like, the why now. So it is mid-August. It's kind of right after the Olympics. It's a quiet period of time before the Leafs do start training camp. I get that, why now? But maybe why now in the picture of, if Auston Matthews was going to be the leader of this team, was it supposed to happen years ago? Was it supposed to happen right when he signed his contract extension? Was this the perfect time for it to happen? I'm just really curious about the timing of this decision.
Yeah, I don't know if there is a perfect time, because on one hand, you're celebrating the face of the franchise who, you know, quite frankly, has been the face of the franchise for a few years now. He's one of the best players in the game. He's one of the faces of the NHL. He's the face of Team USA, and yet he's an alternate captain to a really commendable leader, but a guy who is past his prime. So it kind of feels inevitable. And I think there's two things here that make it interesting. And you bring the first one up, and that's the timing. And if John Tavares's contract had run out, if this was last summer, it probably would be an easier transition. Mm-hmm. And part of me wonders if, because they were unable to really shake up the core in any legitimate way, you know, I think Chris Tanev is a nice ad. You know, you're hoping Oliver Ekman-Larsson can contribute for the early part of his new contract. And, you know, maybe they have something with the goaltending. We don't know. But there wasn't much shakeup after they said everything is on the table. To me, this seems like a way to sell the same core, but in a different way, freshen it up with different letters on the sweaters saying, here's the official Auston Matthews era. And timing wise, it lines up with his new contract, right? He agreed to it, you know, a summer ago, but this is the first year where he's going to be the highest paid guy in the NHL. And it just kind of makes it more official. This is his team now. What makes it a little bit uncomfortable is you're taking it away from someone else, who I think served the team well, although everyone knows playoff success wasn't there. But, you know, John Tavares is about as gracious and as classy of a guy as you could imagine. He's going to make things look pretty easy, I think, at least publicly.
Yeah, and he has to, though, right, Luke? Like, if he's kicking and screaming, I mean, it's just, okay, run out the string on the contract, and you can find another place to play in the twilight years. I mean, I don't know if he was coerced. I don't know if he was asked. I don't know if he brought it to the table. But, and you wouldn't expect anything different, but this was, there's no move. He was out-leveraged here if the leverage was needed, because he's just in that position, right? Like, he does not really have any leg to stand on here if he wanted it to go a different way.
Yeah, which brings us to the other big question, and hopefully we get it answered tomorrow. Maybe we'll never get it answered in full, and that's who had this idea first? You know, was it John? I suspect not. That's just based on the conversations I've had and other reporters have had with him. He seemed very proud to be captain of the Leafs, you know, and I thought he was a good one. He led in his own way, right, which was a pretty quiet way, lead by example, try to speak with his consistency of work ethic and the fact that he's one of the first ones on the ice and in the gym after the season ends. But, you know, so in the Bruins series, Jim Montgomery said, Brad Marchand is our emotional leader. And no one has ever said John Tavares is our emotional leader, mm-hmm. right? He just led in a kind of steady, consistent, you know, his devotion to his job and his devotion to his his craft and his teammates was off the charts. But did you want to go through a brick wall for him? You know, Austin has a little bit more edge. He's also in his prime. He's coming up the best season of his life. So that makes sense to me. I would be surprised if it was John's idea. Was it Trey Living's idea? Was it Keith Pelley's idea? I don't know. And hopefully maybe tomorrow we get that answer of who was really the driving force behind that. Maybe it was brought to John and John got on board because, you know, he's often deferred to Austin as, hey, he's one of the best players in the world. He's the driver of this team. You know, he had no illusions that, you know, Austin wasn't worthy. So I'm sure he's going to be gracious about it. But, you know, there's still a little bit of pride that needs to be swallowed in this case.
I'm curious about the ripple effect in a sense of removing the C and kind of doing a switch in terms of leadership roles. Like, do you think Tavares would then wear an A, or does he maybe want to distance himself from the leadership group in terms of being, you know, a forward face of that? Does the A get passed on to somebody new like a Tanev who's going to be locked in for a while that has a relationship with Trey Living and is a real leader? Like, do you think this opens the door for a couple more shifts in terms of who wears a letter and is a part of the leadership circle with the Toronto Maple Leafs?
Yeah, it's a good question, and that's not clear yet. And to be honest, and it's not dismissing your question, Ailish, but it kind of doesn't matter.
Oh, I agree.
You know what I mean? Like, John Tavares is going to conduct his business the same way, whether there's a C or an A on his sweater. This guy is who he is. And, you know, there were stronger leaders with this very team in the past that didn't wear a letter. Mark Giordano was a leader. Jason Spezza was a leader. Jake Muzzin absolutely was a leader. Their letters were just invisible, but they were better leaders than some of the guys that wore letters. So, you know, it kind of doesn't matter. What matters is, you know, that there is a strong leadership in that room. And maybe this is more symbolic than anything else, saying, hey, you're the highest paid guy. You're the best guy on the team. You're firmly in your prime. We need to get over the hump. This is just kind of making it more front and center. And maybe it's a bit of a challenge to Austin as well, right? Or if a younger guy or a new guy gets a letter, maybe it's a bit of a challenge to them. We think you're ready for this added responsibility. Maybe this will push you to do even more. So I think maybe there's an element of that as well.
I think you hit on something important earlier, and we're speaking to Luke Fox, Sportsnet.ca, about, okay, they didn't make a change to the core four, even though there wasn't a promise they would, but there was intimations that they would, and maybe they've run into a brick wall there. Maybe they tried, and maybe it just wasn't possible. But I do think this is a chance to reset the hierarchy, right? You can, because it's been Mitch and Austin, right? They've been the same. They've been looked at or wanted to be looked at, depending on which side you're talking to, as equals with when it comes to this team. And clearly, Austin Matthews has separated himself to a large degree, at least in my opinion, winning major awards, the goal scoring and the like, and now being named captain. But it is the chance to be like, okay, it's not the core four anymore. It's Austin Matthews' team. William Nylander's clearly going to be here for a while and is very important. But other than that, it's Austin's team. Do you kind of see it as a chance to kind of separate the idea that this was a team built on four players and now that it's a team built on mostly one?
Yeah, I think it's time for fans to maybe start wrapping their heads around that. I think just based on the fact that we are entering the final season of both Tavares and Mitch Marner's contracts, and although they've both said publicly they'd like to re-sign, there doesn't seem to be much tangible there in terms of negotiations that we're going to get an announcement on an extension. And it's a very realistic possibility that maybe these guys won't be wearing the blue and white in 25-26. I mean, if Steven Stamkos and the Lightning can part ways, certainly there could be a parting of ways here. So it's just a possibility. So I do think we maybe are entering a different phase of this era where it's not the core four, it's Austin and Willie and, you know, the supporting cast. And you know, I do think there's a desire to build a bit of a different team, a bit of a different structure. That's not to say Tavares can't come back. especially if he's willing to take a discount. I mean, centermen are so hard to come by in this league. And, you know, he is going to fight Father Time as hard as he possibly can. But I like where you're headed in terms of this is Austin's team. It's not there's a group of these young guys and the team all belongs to them. He is the face of the Leafs now.
So let's talk about the new to be a captain. Like, where have you seen him grow as a leader? Obviously, he's the best player. He's setting records as maybe one of the best Maple Leafs of all time. But this is a big role that comes with responsibility of leading by example and speaking with the media and you know, helping younger guys get acclimated with the NHL. So is he, have you seen those steps in your time of covering him over the last couple seasons that shows that he's ready to be captain?
Yeah, for sure. And there's, you know, captains lead in different ways. You know, we often talk about John being not the most vocal guy. I don't think Austin is the most vocal guy. I think he picks his spots where he pulls teammates aside and maybe checks them a little bit, demands more from them. He is mostly a lead by example guy, stay late after practice and work on his one timer forever, you know, that type of thing. He's not the first to rush off the ice after practice. I think a big way that he leads is, hey, I've never killed a penalty in my life, but the coach wants, you know, me to try to learn how to kill penalties. And that's something he took on last year. You know, he was a Selke finalist for the first time. A couple years back, he led all forwards in block shots. You know, that's not how he grew up. He grew up with the puck on a stick the whole time, playing one way, all offense. And he's really worked on the defensive aspects of the game. He has put the team first. I mean, Sheldon's gone now, but when Sheldon Keefe was there, he would tell you the most remarkable thing about his chase for 70 goals is he wasn't cheating to do so. He wasn't hanging out looking for the long breakaway pass. He rarely gets breakaways, and that's because he's back in his own zone, back-checking, making sure that they clear the zone first. I think that's leadership in a lot of ways. Is there room for improvement? For sure. I do think that maybe he can be more vocal, whether that's publicly or probably more importantly behind closed doors. I know some of his teammates have said, when I've asked what kind of leader he is, they do say that he's a little bit more reserved. So maybe this is a bit of a challenge for him to use his voice more because his play obviously speaks for itself.
I think the starkest contrast, Luke, might be how the captain of the Maple Leafs deals with you guys. John Tavares was somewhat robotic in his sessions with the media. And it was, I guess, saying the right things as much as you could. But if you're a fan of the team, I think it would have been frustrating a lot of times as well, especially in more important moments where you're looking for something that's the opposite of robotic. Matthews is more honest for sure. Maybe a little rougher around the edges, but I think that honesty plays, honestly. And I think he knows how to deal with the media as good as anyone that I've covered, at least in that room for a very short period of time. Like, I don't think it's really changed because I remember 5 years ago, 2019, when everyone thought he was getting the C. And of course, there's the story and what may have kept him from getting the C. I thought he was ready then. Have you long since thought he was ready, and do you think it's going to be any different communicating with Matthews now that this change has been made?
I don't think it's going to be that much different because, you know, he spoke, you know, definitely not every day. He wouldn't sit in his stall the way John would and welcome, you know, a second or third wave of reporters, but he was definitely available every other day. Say, you know, he would answer your questions honestly. Sometimes he would have some a slight edge to him, like if he didn't think the question was fair, or if he thought, you know, he'd already answered that question, he'd let you know it in a polite but knowing way, and that's all fair. And I actually I agree with you, Justin, that, you know, having a bit more of a personality or a bit more a slightly more edge. I mean, John was very diplomatic, I think is a good way to put it. Whereas Austin will be a little bit more blunt, or has been a little bit more blunt. And I don't expect that to change. I think he'll conduct himself the same way. I mean, he knows this market. He knows all the reporters that come around. He's been doing this for, what, 8-9 years now. So I don't expect a huge change that way. And he knows the game. He plays it well.
We're chatting with Luke Fox of Sportsnet ahead of tomorrow, 11 a.m. It's going to be the unveiling of Austin Matthews as the 26th captain in franchise history. How do you think they do it? Do you think, if you have to make predictions, you think John Tavares will be up there and he'll pass the sweater on? Is it going to be like an actual ceremonial handing of the C? Do you think that we'll be able to talk to, you know, all of the important Maple Leafs? Like, what would be your prediction for how they do this kind of unprecedented thing?
Yeah, well, it's my understanding Tavares will be there, and I think it would be awkward if he wasn't, quite frankly. I mean, it can't be the most comfortable thing for John to be there, but I think it's important that he is to show that, just symbolically, to show, hey, I'm part of this, and this is Matthews' team now, and this is the way it should be. Is it going to be a big ceremony? I don't know. I'm wondering if Keith Pelley is going to be there. He was there at the exit meetings and said, you won't see me around a whole bunch. You know, that this is, I'm making an exception for this first meeting. But then they introduced Berube and he's there again. So I am a little curious to see, you know, Shanahan's probably going to be there, but are they going to go as deep as Pelley? Does he still want some face time as this franchise, you know, tries to, if not remold itself, resell itself with a new coach and a new captain and a few new players on the back end. So I'm kind of intrigued about that too.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting. I think it's going to be, I mean, real sports, it's a different venue. I think there's going to be something to it tomorrow. So
great nachos there.
We shall see. Great wings too.
As long as there's wings. Yeah.
The wings are great. Important.
They're bigger than normal rings, which kind of freaks me out, but they're delicious nonetheless. Luke, last one for you. Is there a downside here? Can you envision this kind of turning out in a way that hurts this team in any real discernible way?
I don't think so. I don't know if there's a huge downside just because Tavares is who he is. I think he's going to be inspired. Maybe there's a good thing that this might almost want him to prove some of his doubters wrong and have a bit of a bounce back season. The other thing is, I think he was captain of Team Canada at the World Championships. And I know he's a long shot, but he loves representing the country. So I think you're going to see an inspired Tavares this season, much like I think you're going to see an inspired Stamkos, partly because he wants to make that Four Nations team. And I know on a lot of mock drafts, he's not even anywhere close. But he has so much pride that I think we're going to see the best version of Tavares. I don't see a downside. The only downside I could see is if fans look at this and say, you know what, you're trying to distract us from the fact that you didn't make any changes to the core and you're just redressing the same group. That's the only downside, could be people seeing through this as a PR thing.
I have seen that take a lot over the last, 23 hours, like shuffling deck chairs on the Titanic. Yeah. So, I mean, it'll just be results-based nonetheless. Well, we got the Lightning are for sale. We had an offer sheet today. Double offer sheets. Lightning might be, well, they're working on a sale. We got the Austin Matthews. Does this mean summer's over for you, Luke Fox?
Yeah, and I just booked my first plane ticket for my first work trip. So it's all coming to a crashing halt.
Okay, well, soak it all in the last couple hours before Real Sports tomorrow and Luke Fox. But we appreciate you taking the time. We'll be chatting lots as the summer ends and hockey season comes back. Thanks, Luke.
Okay, thanks, guys. Thanks for having me on.
Thanks so much. Luke Fox of Sportsnet. Yeah, that is, like, today was hockey news. We'll go through some of it a little later, but the Lightning, working on a sale for close to $2 billion. Friedge breaking that one just before we came on, a double offer sheet from the St. Louis Blues to two of the young Oilers. Like, it's happening, folks. And yesterday, before the news broke, we were talking about this is going to be a tough week. You know, we were pretty lucky with the Olympics taking our attention for about 2+ weeks. Then we were pretty lucky with Copa and pretty lucky with Euros. And now it's that quiet time. The Jays calling up some new kids, that's always fun, but then this happens. So very helpful for us as people that talk about sports.
You're looking for something to carry the week. This can definitely carry the week. And tomorrow will be interesting. I mean, like, yeah, it's fascinating talking about it now, but a lot of the Maple Leaf conversation stems from how they do things. Like, it's not just what their decision is. Like, how is this going to be presented? Who made the decision? What we can read between the lines, because there's going to be a lot of between the lines reading tomorrow. So we'll have a lot to talk about throughout the rest of the week.
Yeah, and we'll have our text line opened up now at 590-590 standard messaging and data rates may apply. You can also send us a tweet or a DM your thoughts on this move. It's not something that happens often in the NHL. It's happened a few times. Sometimes it's successful and sometimes it's not. So there are instances where the team that does this goes on to win the cup. Yeah, we've seen those ones. But, you know, most of the time it's a bit of an awkward growing pain. So let us know. You can text us or send us a message. And we'll have a little bit of time after we talk to Aaron Bronstetter to kind of recircle our thoughts, maybe predictions on what tomorrow looks like, what we want to learn. If we could ask a question, we won't be there, but it'll be streaming live here on Sportsnet 590 The Fan at 11 a.m. J.D. Bunkus is going to host that, and we'll make sure everybody can watch, and then we'll break it down at 6 o'clock. But before the end of the show, we're going to talk to Aaron Bronstetter, a big week and weekend ahead. We'll go through all that, some best bets, talk about our guy, Willie Wagner. I told you, we might got something there. He's the son of a major leaguer, so lots to come. All right, we'll be right back on the Fan Pregame.
Big opinions and in-depth conversations covering the Leafs, Jays, Raptors, and the NFL. The J.D. Bunkus Podcast. Subscribe and download the show on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.
All right, we're back on the Fan Pregame. Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Jays and Angels back in action tonight. A 9:30 start on the West Coast. Good one for Will Wagner. We'll get into a little bit of Blue Jays props a little later in the show. But On After Us is a real fun thing that we get to debut. Dana White's Contender Series, Season 8, Episode 1, debuts After Us, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet Plus. Let's bring in our guy, Aaron Bronstetter, Bronny, joining us. Help us break it all down. What's up?
What's up, guys? Nice to see you. I mean, the Olympics have occupied so much of our headspace recently. It's now that it's behind us, we're back into the MMA zone. We got a lot to cover. I mean, this is the real Fan Pregame right now for the Contender Series, yeah. Season 8, launching right after this.
Okay. Yeah, well, we got to do it because we need, yeah, we need like the Cole's notes of this. It's, I mean, I guess if I'm trying to do it myself, kind of like a minor league tryout where you get your chance to perform in front of the big brass, and if you're able to impress them, you get a future in the UFC. Is that kind of how it works?
It's kind of like a live reality show because you've got Dana White sitting cage side, you've got two fighters, and they have to impress the boss. And if you impress Dana White, you'll get a contract into the UFC. And I think that, I believe it was two seasons ago, there was Joe Pyfer on the very first episode. It might have even been last season. They all started to meld together at some point in time. But the first four fights, I believe it was, they just were almost like stinkers. They went to decision, and you know, everybody was kind of like, the air was kind of taken out of the building. And then Joe Pyfer comes in the main event and gets this fast finish. And it kind of set the tone because Dana White was like, if you want to get a contract, be Joe Pyfer. I'm giving Joe Pyfer a contract, and everybody else unfortunately isn't getting one. So it's kind of cool because it's also based a little bit on Dana's mood and how, you know, whether he likes that certain fighting style or how those people performed. And we've seen people not get contracts because they've looked at the clock to see how much time is left in a round. Like, it's basically a real-time reality show, and I think that's what makes it so cool.
That's what I was literally going to ask you. Is like, how do you impress Dana White? Like, what is the recipe for him to be like, I like this person, I want to invest in you? Style, attitude, energy, his tone of how he's feeling that day. Like, that seems like maybe a really hard thing to read going into it. But, like, if you're going to put together a resume of someone that's going to impress Dana White to be successful, like, what are the things that you'd want on your checklist?
Get a first-round finish, and you're going to get a contract. Like, I think that's kind of the formula for success that we've seen previously. But it's also, if you see two fighters and they put on a really exciting fight, even if it goes to a decision, we've seen Dana White give both fighters contracts before. So, again, it's really based on what his mood is like. He's taking notes as it happens. He doesn't really know a lot about the fighters going in, and he likes it that way. It's kind of your chance to impress Dana White. And like you said, sometimes he's easier to impress, sometimes he's harder to impress. And it could just be based on his mood that day. And again, that's what makes the show kind of complex and interesting when you're watching it, is you're kind of trying to guess who he's going to give a contract to as it goes along.
So let's say he's in a great mood and we see a bunch of first round finishes tonight. I don't know if this works for every type of office, but if the UFC offices are like, hey, we just have to worry about headcount. If you're bringing employees in, do you have to kick some employees out? Like, is this bad for certain fighters that are on the roster now, or they just open doors and they have fights mostly every weekend so they can find a spot for everybody?
I think that's kind of the nature of the beast. You see a lot of fighters that end up going on losing streaks in the UFC, and they'll get released around this time of year sometimes. But they tend to try to keep the roster to a certain number. It's around 700 fighters. But yeah, like, I guess if more fighters are getting on the Contender Series, you might see more cuts than usual. I don't know if we have any real empirical evidence that can break that down definitively, but I think that makes sense.
Do we have a bet for tonight?
Well, I think that the best fight is going to be between Antoine Ho and Lonnor Kavanaugh. These are two incredible flyweight fighters. I think they both belong in the UFC. I wouldn't be surprised if that fight goes to a decision. I'm not sure what the odds on that is in particular, but really, whoever the underdog is in that fight, I think you're going to get value if either one of them is like a pretty sizable underdog in that fight. And then in the main event, you've got Schultz against, what is his name, Abdul Malik. Sorry, I've got my notes in front of me here for a Contender Series, because a lot of these guys are prospects that are basically coming onto my radar tonight. But Abdul Malik, if you look at his record, he hasn't fought anybody with a winning record except, I believe, one person who had a 1-0 record. And I never really like seeing that when you have a fighter with those kind of credentials coming in where they haven't beaten anybody really tough. Because on the Contender Series, you're going to get a lot of tough matchups your first time around. And I think that when you look at Abdul Malik, he's got a lot of skill, but he's a 3-1 favorite. Schultz has fought better level of competition. His only loss has come to somebody who's currently in the UFC. So I wouldn't mind rolling the dice on the underdog in that one, just because we haven't seen Abdul Malik really prove anything against a tough opponent.
Okay, so a little later on, after we're off, everybody can watch Dana White's Contender Series Season 8, Episode 1, 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 360 and Sportsnet Plus. Okay, we get to double dip because it's UFC 305 this weekend. I assume you're not going to Australia. Maybe you are. That'd be sweet. It's a bit of a far trip. But we get to see the fighters, one of them that we saw when we were at UFC 298, was it? 297 in Toronto?
I believe, yeah.
Feels like so long ago. But we get to see Duplessis, who we watched, like, could not have been closer. So we're going to see him in the title fight or in one of the fights. So, like, tee up 305 for us. If you are going, that would be sweet. I don't think it's going to work for us to call you because of the time difference. So this is your chance.
Well, it's a 37-hour flight to get there.
Okay, that's crazy.
With two stopovers. So I'm quite relieved that I'm not
okay.
Going to Perth, Western Australia. It's basically like the furthest part, like, place you could go to from here, essentially. It's pretty far. And I've got to say, I'm not disappointed that I'm not going for this one. not because it's not going to be a great night, but more because I'm a suck and don't want to be on a flight for 37 hours each way. But yeah, this is an incredible card with a really solid main event. You've got Israel Adesanya, who's looking to win back the middleweight championship, which he's already done once. So he would be a three-time middleweight champion. We've never seen anybody in the modern UFC do that, where you've lost the title to two different people and you've been able to reclaim it on two different occasions in the same division. It's just kind of uncharted territory. But we have to remember, Israel Adesanya is one fight removed from beating Alex Pereira, who right now is the number two ranked pound-for-pound guy in mixed martial arts. You know, this isn't the guy who is on a steep decline. He's somebody where, if you look at what he had to do, this was his boogeyman, Alex Pereira. Alex had beaten him twice in kickboxing previously and once in mixed martial arts. Israel had never beaten him. He climbs that mountain, beats Alex Pereira. It's like the ultimate moment. And then his next fight is against the guy who's like ranked number 6th or 7th in Sean Strickland. Fight that's tough to get out of bed for. He ends up losing that fight, which at the time was considered a massive upset. But we've since seen what Sean Strickland is capable of. You know, his fight with Dricus du Plessis, you guys were cage side for it back in January. And we saw how close of a fight that was. So I think that when you look at those factors, the fact that Strickland, a lot of people thought he overachieved at the time and that Israel underachieved, maybe that's not the case. And Israel just kind of had trouble getting out of bed for an opponent that he thought he'd be able to walk right through. And I think as a result of that, he drops the title. And now I think he's motivated. This is the longest time off he's taken in years. Back in 2016, he fought 13 times in a year. This is a guy, and that's in kickboxing and MMA combined. He's someone who's always active and always willing to answer the call. This time he decided to be a little bit selfish and said, I'm going to step away. And he's taken almost a year off, which I've covered the sport for a long time. I've never seen somebody take less than a year off, and it feels like it's been 3 years. Like, that's what it feels like because Israel's so active. So I think that that's what makes this such an intriguing fight, is if he can reclaim the title, I think that really etches him in terms of the MMA lore as somebody who's been able to overcome the odds on multiple occasions and win back the championship.
Is that important to the UFC? Like, do they kind of need Adesanya? I mean, the guy who beat him and the guy he beat, and Alex Pereira has become this big megastar with lots of theatrics and the devastating knockouts. He's been really, really important to the company, especially this year. But it feels like Adesanya is definitely a bigger name than Du Plessis, who, you know, we were there and everyone seemed to be there for Sean Strickland and not Du Plessis. Is he still one of the more marketable guys? And if you can get the reclaim the title, excuse me, I mean, there's more opportunity to build around him. Do you think, not that they're gaming the system at all, but Izzy's important to his company, right?
Yeah, for sure. But you know what? It's kind of a win-win for the UFC here because, you know, if Israel wins, like you mentioned, he's got the star power. He's got the charisma. People like him. He's got an exciting fighting style. If he wins the championship, it's great for the UFC because you've got this established star on your hands. But on the flip side of that, Dricus du Plessis has not lost at middleweight since he was 20 years old. He's been 10 years undefeated at middleweight. And now, if you look at what he's able to do and what he's able to bring to the UFC as somebody from South Africa, where the UFC have said they've wanted to do a card in Africa and that based on the infrastructure, South Africa is the likely destination where they'd hold their first ever card on African soil. Having a champion who trains in South Africa, who's a big star there, certainly doesn't hurt them either. Not to mention 30 years old at middleweight, that's still very young in terms of a middleweight's prime. So I think that that's certainly of importance too.
Okay, so that's the main event. What other notable fights on the card? I didn't see any Canadians. Too bad. But I was looking to see what else maybe we could be betting on or what we would want to tune in on.
Well, the co-main event's awesome. You got Steve Ursig. I mean, this guy looks like a combination of the guy who is the star of The Bear and Steve Carell. Like, if you merge those two together, wow. Such an unassuming-looking guy. And last year, when he fought for the title earlier this year, he showed up to these promo shoots wearing, like, this blue polo shirt that made him look like a Best Buy employee. Like, he's just this unassuming guy. And he burst onto the scene this year because he was given a title shot. A lot of people thought he didn't deserve it. He was in the UFC for like less than a year at the time in the flyweight division, which has a lot of contenders. But he really showed up for that fight, and he lost basically by one round against Alexandre Pantoja, who is an incredible champion. And I think that this is a guy who is really exciting to watch. He's fighting Kai Kara-France, who's coming back off of an injury. He suffered a concussion in training and hasn't fought in over a year as well. And you've got New Zealand versus Australia. Steve Ursig's from Perth, so you know he's been dying to fight on this card. Even you know when he fought for the championship, he says, I'm going to be fighting on that card whether I win the championship or not. And thankfully, they're putting him in the co-main event in a spot to shine. But I think that he wins this fight. He's about a minus 160 favorite. Not so heavy a favorite that it's one of those kind of obvious picks, but I think that he has all the skills to get it done against Kai Kara-France, especially given how active he's been and how well he performed against the champion. He's somebody that I have kind of earmarked for this card as a favorite to watch. You've also got Josh Koulibau. He's minus 150. Again, a small favorite against Ricardo Ramos. I just think that Koulibau is the more skilled fighter at this point in time and that he's going to have a big advantage on the feet. And if you're looking for an underdog, at around 2-1, Tai Tuivasa, heavyweight division, this guy I think is a lot more athletic than Jairzinho Rozenstruik, his opponent. And even though he's having a bit of a slump lately, I think that in a heavyweight division with two guys who can thump like this, he's fighting in Australia, close to home soil for him. He's from New Zealand. I think that's going to be an underdog that I would take a look at in Tai Tuivasa.
We're writing those down. Last one for you, Aaron. You know, we see all the different parts of MMA at the Olympics, which you mentioned earlier. Is there ever a world where MMA breaks into the Olympics, and would the powers that be ever allow that?
Well, MMA was already in the Olympics, Justin. It was called Pancration in like 600 BC, back in the old Greek Olympiad.
Just missed that.
Now we're breakdancing, so we've gotten away from that.
So, I mean, we need to bring Pancration back, and maybe we can just call it by its modern name of mixed martial arts back into the Olympics. And I agree with you wholeheartedly. You got your Taekwondo, you got wrestling, no jiu-jitsu in the Olympics, but, you know, you got judo. So a lot of the different elements of mixed martial arts, boxing, you know, all of these different things that make up mixed martial arts are already in the Olympics. I think that Canada could field a pretty good team for the Olympics for mixed martial arts. I would love to see it. You know, it would disrupt the UFC schedule a little bit. But at the same time, it would be great to see mixed martial arts on a stage like the Olympics, back like it was in before Christ, in the old days with Pankration. Let's bring it back.
Okay. Maybe Wyatt Sanford, our bronze medalist, he can help. He could be first in line to make it happen.
Get him rolling around on the mats. He'll be ready in no
time.
There you
go. And Bronny can be ringside reporter for us. We've already got it set, and maybe a couple Olympics from now. Okay. We appreciate you joining us. This is going to be a great week, great night tonight, kicking things off, and enjoy all the action. Thanks.
No problem, man. I've got a puppy upstairs. If you guys heard that barking, it's not a
kind of
wild
puppy?
Dog that's been let loose in the studio. He's half Newfoundlander, half poodle. So
no, he's calling a Newfie poo?
Yeah, a Newfie poo. That's right.
Oh,
bring him down next
time. Can you send us photos, please?
I will definitely
send
you photos.
What's his name?
So I apologize for the barking. His name is Wally. He's a wonderful dog.
Okay, well, I can't focus on
aside
the
aside from
of
him
the show.
Barking during a live hit, he's a wonderful dog.
That's okay. I can't wait to see him virtually, okay, next time. Thanks, Aaron.
All right. Well, I'm not rolling up any newspapers to reprimand them. Don't you worry.
Don't worry.
I look forward to speaking with you guys.
Okay, thanks, Aaron. Aaron Bronsetter of Sportsnet. Oh, Newfie Poo. They're so cute.
Are they?
Yeah.
Well,
I knew right away.
Let him send it over.
When he said Newfie Poo, it's a cutie.
It's a collab.
Yep. I got a Bernedoodle. So.
You have a collab.
They're those similar dogs. Okay. I just thought of this when we were talking about Australia, the UFC, this big event. What do you think the odds are that in some sort of promotional thing, the Australian breakdancer that made worldwide headlines is somehow involved in this event?
I would say the odds are low.
Really?
Yeah.
She's all over the world.
She is all over the world. I mean, there is
she is viral.
That is an opportunity. And the breakdancing stage is a lot like the octagon without the cage, right? It's just kind of that. Same size.
I think there's an opportunity there.
Maybe there is. I was thinking about it because they cater all this to the North American audience, right? Like the other week, the fight was in England and they were fighting at like 5:30 in the morning and everyone in the crowd was like sleeping.
Yeah, it's kind of sad.
I guess they probably do the same thing, but they're fighting in the middle of the day on Sunday if it's halfway around the world. Well, it's better than 5 a.m.
True. But like it's a nighttime
Sunday.
Sport. Like
it is a nighttime.
You
got to
be in a nighttime mood to watch people beat each other up like that.
Yeah, I think so.
It's not like I'm having my pancakes and eggs.
It's not the best over waffles.
That. No, it's not a waffle sport. Okay, we have lots to go through still. What do you want to touch on?
I think we got to talk about the offer sheet.
Okay,
offer sheets.
I love offer sheets. And there's only been really two successful ones, I think, in the modern salary cap.
Yeah, it's
era.
Rare.
So this is a big one, though. So Blues tender two offer sheets, two of them, to Holloway and Broberg of the Oilers, both 22 and 23 years old. They're very young. Obviously, they are coming onto the scene. Broberg and Holloway.
Really important pieces for the Oilers.
And the Oilers are tight against the cap. They need to make, obviously, this happen. So the St. Louis Blues offered Holloway 2 years and $2.29 million per season, while Broberg would be 2 years with a 4.58 cap hit.
That's a wild number to me. Just very quickly on Broberg, he was a seventh defenseman until halfway through the playoffs, and he was great when he stepped in. But 4.5, 2 years for Broberg, that's gonna be really difficult for the Oilers to stop.
And so, if the Oilers can't sign the matching offer sheet, what happens?
If they can't or choose not to, they just end up on the St. Louis Blues, which is interesting,
but they get a pick, right?
They get some compensation. I think it's a second and third for Broberg and a second for Holloway, maybe a third for Holloway. Either way, you get some reasonable compensation, but it doesn't help you in the next 5 years, likely, when this team's trying to win a Stanley Cup right now. I kept thinking again about that Oilers video with Zach Hyman. He's like, I hope everyone comes back. And you're like, oh, that's why Connor Brown signed a one-year deal worth $1 million and Janmark did just about the same. And yet the two young guys who, have proven to be valuable, but haven't proven themselves really or defined themselves as NHL players are chasing the big money. And I don't slight them for that, I suppose. But it really did feel like everyone bought in with the Oilers. And then a rare offer sheet comes by and these guys are jumping at the money. The Oilers still have time here and some decisions they could make. Maybe it costs them a Cody Ceci. Maybe they have to make a trade they wouldn't necessarily want to make to keep these guys, but they were already in a bind, and it makes the vice a little bit tighter around Stan Bowman.
They've got 7 days to figure it out, and that is not really a lot of time to clear up that much cap space, so something's got to give, and if not, then the Blues, like, good on them. They're going to get two young players for...
Or one of them.
Yeah. It's obviously not tied together. Okay.
But, like, this was the perfect, like, tactical maneuver. Because generally you can do one, and I'm like, oh, we'll find a way to match this. Like, thank you so much.
No, but when you do two...
It's like, maybe you have to choose between them, and I guess St. Louis would be happy with either. It would be great to see this more, and yet this, at the same time, I'm kind of bummed because I want the Oilers to have the best chance at putting themselves back in that position. Because frankly, that was very interesting seeing Connor McDavid in a game 7 of the Stanley Cup playoffs or Stanley Cup final elevated it to another degree, I think, for the casual fan. And losing two important pieces definitely will hurt them. So we'll see how they navigate.
Okay, so we have 7 days to get to the conclusion of that. Tomorrow we'll find out the conclusion of this mysterious press conference, which everybody knows is for Austin Matthews' debut as captain. We have a minute or two to talk about that. What do you expect? What do you want this to be? Because this is like a very big pivot point for this organization, just in terms of the forward-facing person that is your captain.
Yeah, I do think this is a unique opportunity to create a different hierarchy. I think you can say it boldly if you want to, that Austin Matthews is the most important piece of this team. Everything runs through him, and there is clear separation between him and everyone else. Does he make that much more than William Nylander? No. But there's still, you know, clear delineation here between number 34 and everyone else. And I guess if you're moving off the core four design and being like, okay, now everyone earns their keep, that's a message to Mitch Marner. Mm-hmm. How do you fit into this puzzle? Same, I guess, goes with John Tavares. These are the two guys who have, well, Mitch Marner has a lot of leverage, but have less leverage in the long term. How do they react to now being part of Austin Matthews' team? This can be a signifying moment that things are different for the Toronto Maple Leafs, even if they're coming back with pretty much the exact same team.
And we're going to get that information around 11 a.m. We'll have that on Sportsnet 590, The Fan. J.D. Bunkus will help host that as it goes live. Okay, so my best bet, and this is kind of to take it as you'd like, Austin Matthews' goals are set at 55.5 this year, and his points set at 93.5 points. Like, you think that he's going to be invigorated by this? Does it matter at all? Is it going to change the way he plays? Possibly. I think he can hit the over on those regardless of that situation. So this is the opening line on that. I think we saw the best goal scorer ever, or like in our season last year with Austin Matthews. I think he can do it again. So I'd be picking the over on that and over on points. Seems low to me. So those would be my best bets. And then Will Wagner, who made his Blue Jays debut yesterday. He went 3-for-4, had a really great night, 3-hit game. You can get his home run prop now. It wasn't up yesterday, so of course I'll give it to you. Plus 680, why not? Live a little.
The good times roll. Yeah, with those Austin Matthews ones, like, if we could simulate that and it was the bet was settled tomorrow, I'd play both of those every day of the week.
I thought they were like super low.
Low numbers, but you got to invest and wait, you know, 9 months for these to settle, which is probably not the most attractive thing ever. The Blue Jays and Angels continue their 3-game set on Sportsnet tonight. Kevin Gausman versus Carson Fulmer. Fulmer just making his 6th start of the season, but has 64 strikeouts in 67 innings this year. Gausman went 8 innings, pitching a lot to contact, only 2 Ks in 8 innings last time out, but a victory nonetheless. I think it sets up well for the Blue Jays. Blue Jays minus 120.
Love it.
You know, it's near pick'em price. We should have the better starter out there. Kevin Gausman's season hasn't been a masterpiece by any means, but still Kevin Gausman pitched well last time. I'll ride with the Blue Jays and Kevin Gausman.
I got to say a massive, massive, massive happy birthday to someone very important in my life. My brother. It's also your birthday. So that was kind of the joke. It's all my brother.
Do we share birthdays?
It's my brother's birthday and your birthday, Justin. Great. So happy birthday to everyone born on August 13th, but specifically you.
It's a good
Jordan.
Day. Johnny Gaudreau.
How do you feel?
Jordan Forfar.
Oh, Johnny Gaudreau today too.
That's about all I know. Yeah.
A lot of J's. Jordan, Johnny, and Justin.
Yeah.
That's weird.
It's not all that weird. Yeah. It's a common first letter.
I know you didn't want me to say it, but I had to.
I knew you would. And you left so much time that we have to continue talking about it for the next 30 seconds.
I could sing it
for you.
Which
I don't want to do. No, I don't think that should happen.
Okay. All right. Well, I'll wrap everything up in a bow. On After Us, you've got Dana White Contender Series Season 8, Episode 1. That's 7 p.m. on Sportsnet 360, Sportsnet Plus. You can watch the Blue Jays and the Angels at 9:30 tonight. That'll be on Sportsnet and Sportsnet 590, The Fan. You can text Justin or send a message through our text
line. Are you going to give my number out too?
No.
All my personal information?
You can tweet him a happy birthday. How about that?
Okay, that's fair. Yeah.
We'll be back tomorrow at 11 a.m. You'll have the press conference. We'll have that on Sportsnet 590 The Fan. And we'll be back at 6 to break it all down with the newest face, the Maple Leafs.
You're not taking a vacation day on your birthday next year.
I won't.
It's not happening.
Bye.